Hi, and welcome to the Norwalk Hour. I'm Brian Burgess, and we'll begin with the front page article from the Wednesday, March 20th edition, headlined, Wagshall Applies for Diversionary Program. This front page lead article by Pat Tomlinson. A felon who police say suffers from delusions of being in the military and was found dressed in camouflage and carrying a fake rifle near a Norwalk school in December applied for a supervised diversionary program on Tuesday. Attorney Rob Schrage applied for the Psychiatric Accelerated Rehabilitation Program on behalf of his client, Brandon Wagshall, during a pretrial hearing at the State Superior Court in Stamford. Wagshall will now undergo a mental health evaluation to find out if the 26-year-old Norwalk resident is a proper fit for the program, according to Judge Gary White. Just because you apply doesn't mean you get it, White told Wagshall at Tuesday's hearing. If the program is granted, Wagshall would be teamed up with a probation officer who has specialized training in working with people who have psychiatric disabilities. If Wagshall successfully completes the court-ordered treatment program, his case could be dismissed. Wagshall pleaded guilty in 2021 to illegally possessing a large-capacity magazine and second-degree assault from unrelated incidents in 2019 and 2020, and was sentenced to 10 years in prison, suspended after 4 years served, followed by 5 years of probation. He was released from prison in October. He has a history of violent behavior, officials said, and was found walking along Connecticut Avenue in Norwalk on October 23rd, wearing a gas mask and appearing disoriented, according to an arrest warrant for violating his probation. He was taken to Norwalk Hospital and remained there as an inpatient until November 13th, the documents stated. He continued to suffer from the delusions during his stay up until at least November 7th, according to the documents, which said he still has military delusions. He does not care what anyone says. Wagshall was arrested on December 14th and charged with carrying a dangerous weapon, second-degree breach of peace, illegal use of a facsimile firearm, and 2 counts of violation of probation after Norwalk police received reports of a man dressed in camouflage holding what appeared to be an assault rifle in the area of Maple Street and Van Buren Avenue. Police said they found Wagshall nearby, lying face down on Norwalk River Valley Trail with an airsoft rifle next to him. If found guilty of violation of probation, Wagshall could face up to 6 years in prison. Norwalk police arrested Wagshall in August 2019 after they received tips from the FBI that he was attempting to illegally purchase extended magazine clips in New Hampshire. Wagshall had been a student at Central Connecticut State University at the time. During the arrest, police seized a .40-caliber handgun, a .22-caliber rifle, a rifle scope with a laser, 4 firearm optic sights, a firearm flashlight, body armor with a titanium plate, a full camouflaged outfit, a ballistic helmet, tactical gloves, a camouflaged bag, computers, and numerous .40-caliber, .22-caliber, and 300 blackout rounds of ammunition, according to the search warrant. Investigators wrote in the warrant that Wagshall had an interest in mass shootings that dated back to 2008, when he was a 6th grader at Ponus Ridge Middle School. In November of that year, Wagshall threatened to shoot another student using his father's guns after he said the other's child's talking made it hard for him to concentrate. Wagshall was arrested again in February 2020 after police say he assaulted his father with a pipe. Also on today's front page, a lawsuit alleges an eye surgeon damaged an official's vision. This front page article by Daniel Tepfler. Stamford's chief information officer had hoped to begin a second career as a flight instructor after he retired, but alleges in a lawsuit that those hopes vanished when a routine eye surgery severely damaged his vision. Isidore Izzy Sobowski claims in the lawsuit filed in State Superior Court in Bridgeport that doctors at the Wilton Surgery Center failed to properly clean their instruments, resulting in him contracting a sight-threatening eye infection. The Stamford resident is seeking unspecified damages against the surgery center and their ophthalmologist, Dr. Glenn Ostriker. Ostriker, a Greenwich resident, also serves as the director of ophthalmology at Stamford Hospital, which is also named in the suit. I envisioned a whole life for myself in retirement filled with playing with my grandkids, pursuing my lifelong passion of piloting planes, and spending time with my wife, Fran, Sapkowski said in a written statement. The defendants shattered this dream when they failed to sterilize the instruments during my routine cataract surgery, leading to a near-fatal infection and ultimately blindness in my eye. Accountability is needed to ensure that this never happens again to another family. The lawyer for Stanford Health, Eric Stockman of Stockman O'Connor Connors, said, "As this matter is the subject of pending litigation, Stanford Health will express its views and defend itself through the judicial process." Lawyers for the surgery center and the doctor did not return emails and calls for comment. Sapkowski's wife, Frances Tischler, is a co-plaintiff in the case. Izzy and his wife, Fran, have had their lives completely upended by the defendant's negligence, said their lawyer, Douglas Morabito, of the Bridgeport law firm Koskoff, Koskoff & Beter. Izzy came in for a routine cataract procedure and was left with irreparable damage to his eyes, deeply compromising his quality of life along with his family's. This lawsuit is seeking justice for Izzy and Fran for what was plainly a preventable error. Sapkowski, a nationally recognized expert in artificial intelligence, was appointed Stanford's first chief information officer in 2021. According to the suit, on May 24, 2022, Sapkowski went to the Wilton Surgery Center for cataract surgery. But the very cataract surgery that was supposed to extend Izzy's horizons instead left his future plans permanently grounded, the lawsuit states. The suit claims that the center's medical staff and Ostriker did not adequately and properly clean and sterilize the surgical equipment used during the surgery, resulting in Sapkowski's contracting a bacterial infection in his eye. The lawsuit claims that Sapkowski was not the only patient treated at the Wilton Surgery Center that day to experience vision loss following a scheduled surgery. According to the lawsuit, at least one additional patient was blinded after also developing an infection. As a result of his condition, Sapkowski now suffers from permanent and severe vision loss, punctuated by uncontrollable eye tearing and severe light sensitivity, the suit states. Ostriker has asked the court to dismiss the case, claiming Sapkowski and Tischler failed to include a sufficient written expert opinion letter authored by a similar healthcare provider. As of Monday, the judge had not ruled on that motion. In other front page news, the Norwalk River flows freely after removal of the Dana Dam. This front page article by Heather Sillins. Since the Dana Dam was torn down last September in Wilton, allowing the Norwalk River to run freely, experts have begun noticing favorable environmental transformations at the site, and even more positive changes anticipated in the coming months. Removing the dam was a massive win and the biggest project we could do to improve the health of the Norwalk River, said Gerald Barafati, Mianus Chapter Coordinator for the nonprofit Trout Unlimited, a national conservation organization that protects and restores cold water fisheries. There are over 4,000 dams in Connecticut, the majority of which no longer serve any sort of function or purpose, nor ever did, like the Dana Dam, which was built to create a swimming and skating pond, Barafati said. Dams block migratory fish from reaching upstream, spawning habitat, create impoundments that heat up the water, and disrupt the natural transportation of sediments. With the dam gone, the water temperature in the Norwalk River in the summer will drop dramatically, which will be good for cold water fish such as trout, he said. Additionally, migratory species such as eels, herring, and sea lamprey from Long Island Sound will gain renewed access, vital upstream spawning areas that to the $2.7 million Dana Dam removal project. The main purpose of the project was to create aquatic connectivity on the Norwalk River, said Alex Crofta, Ecological Restoration Project Manager for Save the Sound, a New Haven-based nonprofit aimed to improve water quality in the Sound. The dam had acted as a barrier to the migration of organisms and to natural river physical processes. It prevented the movement of sediment and organic material that created a variety of habitats for organisms that live in the river. Further, the Dana Dam had a negative impact on the health of surrounding vegetation and altered how the Norwalk River impacted its floodplain in the area north of Merwin Meadows Park and the Trackside Teen Center in Wilton. When a work crew tore down the concrete dam in September, it allowed the river to run freely and restored the floodplain in the area along the Norwalk River Valley Trail as well, Crofta said. When the river spills over its banks with intermittent flooding, it deposits debris and sediment on the floodplain and creates fertile and strong unique habitats, which become home to different types of trees, plants, and animals, he said. This particular area of the Norwalk River can now experience a wide range of environmental growth that was impossible with the dam in place, Crofta said. Diadromus fish, which can migrate between freshwater and saltwater, will be able to move upstream through the former dam site and beyond as early as this spring, he said. This project just about doubled the available freshwater habitat in the Norwalk watershed that fish are in from the Long Island Sound. Save the Sound intends to use environmental DNA to track this species moving through the area. Organisms constantly shed cells into the water, and a fish biologist from Save the Sound will sample the water to detect what creatures have been there, he said. The spring fish migration season is just around the corner, and I'm confident that we will find American eel, river herring, and sea lamprey swimming their way past where the dam used to be in the coming months, added Barafati. New vegetation is growing on the restored sections of the site, Crofta said, and should attract wildlife. Water has also been able to spill out over the banks and onto the floodplains several times since the dam was removed, he said. Crews will monitor the site every year to see what type of vegetation is rebounding and determine whether it's native or invasive, according to Crofta. Save the Sound and Trout Unlimited are working together to plan a tree planting initiative for this spring to further restore the site. There's still a lot more work to be done. There's dozens of dams that are still standing in the Norwalk River watershed, Barafati said. We're actively working toward the full removal of the Cannondale Dam, which was partially breached by Trout Unlimited in 2018, and exploring options for the removal of two dams at the old Gilbert and Bennett factory in Redding, the largest upstream barrier on the river. Signs have been put up at the former site of the Dana Dam in Wilton to explain the story of the fish and the impact of the dam's removal on the landscape and the Norwalk River. I'm really excited for folks to take a look at the landscape around them and understand the history around it and how we've impacted it and think about how we can impact it for the better going forward, Crofta said. In other news, a front page article by Ken Dixon, lines are expected for early primary voting. Connecticut's upcoming presidential primary will be the first time in state history there will be extra days of early voting, including a Saturday. And Secretary of State Stephanie Thomas announced on Tuesday the 169 towns and cities are ready. But Thomas warned that each voter checked in on the state's computerized registration system, registered Republicans and Democrats may have to wait longer than usual during the 4-day early voting period of March 26th, 27th, 28th, and 30th. Remember, this is a new form of voting, so we have to have new expectations, Thomas said, stressing that there are 46 other states that have some form of early voting. Speaking to reporters in her state capitol office, Thomas noted that in 2022, more than 60% of state voters approved an amendment to the state constitution on early voting, and that last session the General Assembly approved a framework of 4 days of early voting for presidential primaries and special elections, 7 days for other primaries, and 14 days for general elections. Next week, voting hours at the polls will be from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the extra 4 days, while primary election day on April 2nd will have traditional voting hours from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Our elections division and our IT division have literally been working around the clock to write the processes, test the system, and make sure that we have the technology in place to allow for early voting. And I have nothing but gratitude for the hundreds of registrars of voters and town clerks who have helped participate and make early voting what it will be, Thomas said. Without them, our election simply would not happen. Most voters will likely cast their early ballots in their local town and city halls, so it will be important for Republicans and Democrats, unaffiliated voters are not allowed to vote in the closed party primaries, to look up where they may participate in early voting on the Secretary of State's website. You do not want to go to your normal polling place, and there may be lines, Thomas said. Even if you don't typically experience lines, it is a slightly longer process because it's a live process. Every voter has to be looked up individually. And also, registrars are doing this for the first time using new spaces, so there may be some little bumps in the road. Patricia Spruance, president of the Connecticut Town Clerks Association, said Tuesday that her members are ready for early voting. I'm not aware of any incidents, said Spruance, who is the Windham town clerk, in a phone interview. But it's uncharted waters. Chris Prue, president of the Registrar of Voters Association of Connecticut, agreed Tuesday that his members are also ready. He said that for early voting, ballot officials will have direct computer lines to the statewide voter database. There were dedicated members of the Secretary of the State's team and the vendor that took care of the preparations, said Prue, the Democratic registrar for the town of Vernon. It's a completely separate network from the town's. If there were problems, they just need another Ethernet cord. We are prepared, said Ann Newberry, the Republican registrar of voters for Farmington. We have our ballots. The setup is done. There are no worries here. And voter information can be found at myvote.ct.gov. Also from today's front page, police sergeant is charged in a fatal crash, wants car back. This article by Lisa Backus and Alex Wood. The city police sergeant arrested on motor vehicle misconduct charges in connection with an off-duty crash last April that killed a 24-year-old man wants his Tesla returned, his attorney said. Shannon Sherry was charged by state police in February with misconduct with a motor vehicle and failure to maintain a proper lane in the crash on Interstate 84 in Southington that killed Elijah Joseph Vallier. Tuesday at State Superior Court in New Britain, Sherry's attorney, Alec Goulash, said his client wants to regain possession of the Tesla he was driving when the fatal crash occurred on April 19, 2023. The car was seized by state police last April as part of the investigation into the crash. A judge did not rule during Tuesday's proceedings on whether Sherry could have the vehicle returned. The case was continued to April 24th. Norwalk Police Chief James Walsh said in a news release in February that Sherry was placed on paid administrative leave after he was arrested and that the department's internal affairs unit would conduct its own investigation now that the criminal probe had been completed. A warrant for Sherry's arrest said the state police investigation found the cause of the crash was that Sherry made an unsafe lane change movement, going from the left lane to the right in one movement, while trying to quickly exit the highway. Sherry demonstrated driver inattention in that there was insufficient or no attention for activities critical for safe driving, the warrant stated. State police said that the April 19, 2023 crash occurred on Interstate 84 near Exit 30 in Southington. Vallier had been driving a 2003 Ford F-250 Super Duty east on the highway in the right lane when a 2023 Tesla Model 3, driven by Sherry, veered out of the left lane, crossed the center lane, and collided with the pickup truck, state police said. The video footage contradicted Sherry's sworn statement that he provided to state police. According to the warrant, Sherry told state police that he had been heading east on I-84 near Exit 30 in the center lane. He told police that he did not see anyone in the right lane and signaled to move over from the center to the right lane, but a gray truck sideswiped the passenger side of his vehicle and the truck spun out, the warrant read. Sherry told troopers he pulled over to exchange information with the other driver, but when he got out of his vehicle, he saw the truck upside down in the westbound side of Interstate 84. Shannon Sherry explained that he ran over to check on the operator of the truck, but someone was telling everybody to get away, Dean wrote in the arrest warrant. Sherry was able to bring the Tesla to a stop in the right shoulder. He and a passenger in the Tesla were uninjured and declined medical treatment, according to the warrant. Neither vehicle had any mechanical issues that would have contributed to the crash, Dean wrote in the warrant. Sherry was freed after posting $25,000 bond, state police said in a news release. In 2011, Norwalk police charged Sherry with disorderly conduct during a domestic violence incident. The state's judicial website shows no record of the court case, and the outcome is not clear. Also in Norwalk, the Magnet school principal is to return from administrative leave. This article by Colleen Rose Ozanek. Concord Magnet school principal Medard Thomas will return to his post on Thursday after being on paid administrative leave for over 3 months, a district statement said on Monday evening. Superintendent Dr. Alexandra Estrella is pleased to announce that Dr. Medard Thomas will be returning to his position as principal of Concord Magnet School on Thursday, March 21st, said the joint statement from the Norwalk Public Schools and the Norwalk Association of School Administrators. The team will work with Mr. Thomas to ensure a smooth transition. NPS Media Relations Specialist Emily Morgan could not be immediately reached for additional comments or information. Lynn Moore, principal of Norwalk High School and president of the Norwalk Association of School Administrators, also could not be immediately reached for comment. It is the first update the district has offered regarding Thomas's leave since it went into effect on November 29, 2023. Except for a February statement that Dana Carpio, school board chair, issued in support of Estrella's leadership amid Thomas's leave. I wish to express support for Dr. Alexandra Estrella and her handling of personnel matters, Carpio said of the district's superintendent in her statement. The investigation of personnel matters can be complicated and time-consuming, and as is appropriate, Dr. Estrella has relied on district legal counsel to conduct a thorough review to assure appropriate accountability and fairness to all parties. Also in Norwalk, the BET weighs fixes in Norwalk budget dilemma. This article by Catherine Lutke. After combing through and trimming the City of Norwalk's budget this past week, the Board of Estimate and Taxation discussed the dilemma of finalizing a budget in the face of a dramatic increase in residents' taxes. On Wednesday night, the residents of Norwalk will have the opportunity to weigh in on the budget plan. BET members said they were eager to hear residents' thoughts to help shape their priorities on the budget. I know this is always a grueling process, but especially this year, where we have to make some very, very difficult decisions, Mayor Harry Rilling said during the VET meeting on Monday night. Even with a completely flat budget, Norwalk residential taxes are set to increase because of the result of the 2023 revaluation, was an increase in the value of residential property and a slight decrease in commercial property values. This year, 71.5% of Norwalk's property value is residential, and 28.5% is commercial property value. Last year, residential property was 66% and commercial was 34%. This shift between residential and commercial property values means residential properties will bear an increase in the tax burden. Norwalk's Common Council set the spending cap for fiscal year 2024-25 at $440.6 million, a 4% increase from last year. While the BET has worked to cut and refine the city budget, residents' taxes will still increase dramatically with a $440.6 million budget. These are tough times. Tough decisions have to be made, said Troy Gellerette, a BET member. I can't imagine having a 36%, a 37% increase in my taxes. It's crazy. I'm recommending that we have a 5% cut across the board on the city side and on the education side to get us to bring back to a number that the Norwalk residents can live with, Gellerette said. BET members weighed Gellerette's proposal of a 5% cut, which would result in reduction of city services. It is within the power of this board to cut the budget by 5%, Rilling said. I caution that because we will be possibly laying off police officers, firefighters, teachers. And again, no action comes without a reaction. Another idea suggested to reduce the tax burden on residents was to set different mill rates on residential and commercial properties. As BET, the most important thing that we do at the end of April is set the mill rates, said Ann Yang, a BET member. The legality of setting different mill rates is something the city is looking into, but this solution could hurt Norwalk's commercial properties, such as office buildings, that are already struggling. We have not been blind to this possibility, Rilling said. We have asked Corporation Council, he said. Right now, there is only one city in the state of Connecticut that does that, and it's Hartford. Increasing the commercial property mill rate could also cause rent prices to go up, Rilling noted. The BET's public hearing will be on Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. in the Common Council chambers and over Zoom. In an article by Kayla Mulchler, Westport Police, Fire, and EMS could combine headquarters into one facility. The police, fire, and EMS departments are looking to combine their headquarters into a joint public safety facility to enhance operations in town. Deputy Fire Chief Nick Marsan said the goal is to build a better and more up-to-date and fortified emergency operations center, which could help operations move more smoothly. Recently, the Board of Finance approved $110,000 for conceptual plans to get the process started. Marsan said the project has been in the works since 2018, when the fire department went before the Board of Finance to request a study for the renovation or reconstruction of 4 fire stations. The average age of the buildings is 85 years old, and the fire department and public works department have done all they can to maintain them, he said. However, Marsan said, the buildings are increasingly unable to meet our demands of a modern fire service. After talks with town leadership and determining that it would be $70 million just for the fire improvements, town administrators looked at the 2 other emergency departments. Current public safety best practices are indicating the trend is in the creation of a joint public safety facility, Marsan said. So the fire department started looking into combining the forces as a solution and have turned to other municipalities for inspiration, including Greenwich and some in lower Massachusetts. Marsan said the administration is hoping a facility like this will enhance emergency response coordination, since fire, police, and EMS will all be at the same location. However, town administrators need to ensure the facility would keep response times to fires the same as it is currently. In other news, Connecticut ranked 5th in home foreclosure activity in February. This article by Luther Termal. Connecticut had the 5th highest home foreclosure rates in the country in February, according to a new report from real estate data firm ATTOM. The state's foreclosure rate last month was 1 in every 2,884 housing units, according to the report. South Carolina had the highest foreclosure rate of 1 in every 2,284 units. Nationwide, 1 in every 4,279 housing units had a foreclosure filing in February 2024. For the purposes of the ATTOM report, foreclosure filings include default notices, scheduled auctions, and bank repossessions. Nationwide, there were a total of 32,938 U.S. properties with foreclosure filings last month, an increase of 8% from February 2023. Rob Barber, Adams' chief executive officer, said the increase in foreclosure activity hints at shifting dynamics within the housing market. There are currently 86 foreclosed homes currently for sale in Connecticut, according to the real estate website Zillow. Municipalities have another 251 homes scheduled for foreclosure sales, according to data from the state's judicial branch. The 3 communities with the largest number of foreclosure sales listed on Monday were Bridgeport with 19, Hartford with 12, and 10 in Middletown. In today's Life Tributes, Mario N. Boccarossa, Sr., formerly of Wilton, passed away on February 19th in Blountville, Tennessee. And Teresa M. Napolitano of Norwalk passed away on March 14th. And that is all the time we have for today. I'm Brian Burgess, and I've been reading from the Wednesday, March 20th edition of the Norwalk Hour. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.